Go any further, Paul?
We'll go just as far as that tree, Steve, and then we'll turn back.
It's funny, we haven't seen the cottage.
Yes. Wait a minute. I can see a light through the tree. Yes. Yes, there it is.
Ooh, still quite a long way away.
Yes, and it looks to me as if...
What was that?
Someone calling.
It's over there, behind the hedge.
Yes. Give me your hand, Steve.
Have you got the torch?
Yes, come on.
Oh, Paul.
By Timothy.
Do you know him?
Yes.
Who is it?
It's Ted Angus.
Ted Angus?
Yes, just look at him. He's really been beaten up, poor devil.
Don't hurt me. Please don't hurt me.
No, it's all right, Angus. It's all right. No one's going to hurt you. This is Paul Temple. You remember? We met at the police station.
Oh, I remember. Temple, listen.
Yes, what is it?
Temple, this is important. Ask Mrs. Fletcher about...
Go on, Angus, I'm listening.
Ask Mrs. Fletcher about the coat.
That was the second episode of the Francis Durbridge serial, Paul Temple and the Margot Mystery, with Peter Cook as Paul Temple and Marjorie Westbury as Steve. Production for the BBC was by Martin C. Webster.
In the next episode, Paul wants to find out why he's been asked to withdraw from the case, and we want to find out as well, and we can, tomorrow at the same time.
The Digital Station on radio, TV and online. BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Now we find the genteel Hercule Poirot attempting in vain to find a British holiday by the sea that meets all of his requirements. This time he's wondering what possessed him to think he could get away from it all in Devon. It's part one of Evil Under the Sun.
We present John Moffat as Hercule Poirot in Agatha Christie's Evil Under the Sun.
And so I said to Mr. Gardner, sightseeing is all very well, and I do like to do a place thoroughly, but after all, we've done England pretty well, and all I want now is to get some quiet spot by the seaside and just relax. That's what I said, isn't it, Odell?
Yes, darling.
It is not often that I expose myself to the perils of the English summer holiday. The uncertainty of the weather, the discomfort of the hotels, and the cuisine. Oh, ma foi, the cuisine.
Sanitary arrangements ever since
but
a sister of his.
For once in my life, I had allowed myself to be tempted. The Jolly Roger Hotel on Smuggler's Island off the south coast of Devon was, I had been assured, the exception. A positive paragon among hotels.
What I like about this place is that it is so intime, if you know what I mean. And so private, isn't that so, Miss Brewster?
Quite right, Mrs. Gardner. No sharabangs, no day trippers.
And being such a small place, we can all talk to one another and everybody knows everybody else. Mr. Kelso told us that the most interesting people came here, and he was right. There's you, Monsieur Poirot.
Oh, no.
And there's Miss Darnley. I just couldn't believe it. All my favorite dresses come from her salon. It's such a lovely woman, isn't she, Odell?
Yes, darling.
And I did hear that Arlena Stewart arrived here late last night. We've seen every single one of her shows, haven't we, Odell?
Yes, darling.
She's Mrs. Marshall now. Why a woman like that ever bothers to marry is quite beyond me.
I was just tickled to death when I found out who you were, Monsieur Poirot. Wasn't I, Odell?
Yes, darling.
Although, I must confess, it did give me rather a turn meeting you. You see, I thought you might be here professionally.
My wife is so sensitive, Monsieur Poirot.
Well, I just couldn't bear it if I was going to be mixed up in some kind of murder mystery.
Ah, but let me assure you, Madame Gardner, that I am simply here like you to enjoy myself. I do not even let the thought of crime enter my mind.
No bodies on Smuggler's Island.
Ah, but that is not true. Regard them there on the beach, lying out in rows. They are not men and women. There is nothing personal about them. They are just bodies.
Some of them are rather good bodies.
What did you say, Odell?
Nothing, darling.
It is deplorable.
Deplorable?
Bodies arranged on slabs like butcher's meat.
But that's too far-fetched for words.
Oh, it may be, yes.
Mind you, I agree with you on one point. Those girls lying out there in the sun are sure to grow hair on their legs and arms. I said to Irene, that's my daughter, if you go on lying out in the sun, you'll have hair all over you, on your arms and your legs, and hair on your bosom if you don't watch out. Didn't I, Odell?
Yes, darling.
Well, it's time for my morning livener. You coming along with us for a drink, Miss Brewster?
Not just now, thanks.
Come along then, Odell. A port and brandy would be just the thing for your tummy upset.
Yes, darling.
Aren't American husbands wonderful?
Morning, Reverend.
Oh, Lord. Here comes the church militant.
Splendid walk. All the way down to Harford and back along the cliffs. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Mr. Lane.
Good morning, Monsieur Lane.
Been for your row yet, Miss Brewster?
Any minute now. Nothing like rowing for the stomach muscles. You should try it, Monsieur Poirot. Get some of that weight off.
Thank you, mademoiselle. But I detest boats. The movement of the sea, it is not pleasant.
But the sea is as calm as a mill pond.
No. There is no such thing as a calm sea. Always there is motion.
Seasickness is a really odd thing. It seems so unfair. Quite sickly people are often good sailors. Someone told me it was something to do with the spine.
There's nothing whatever wrong with my spine.
Then there's some people can't stand heights. I'm not very good myself, but Mrs. Redfern is far worse. The other day, on the cliff path, she turned quite giddy. She had to hold on to me. She said she once got stuck halfway down that outside staircase on Milan Cathedral.
She'd better not go down that ladder to Pixie Cove, then. And that's a real test of the nerves.
Oh, she's coming up from her bathe now.
Ah, how delicately pale her skin is. So different from all the other cooked lobsters. Mm.
It's her colouring, of course. Ash blonde. So very English.
Good morning, everyone.
You've earned Monsieur Poirot's approval, Mrs. Redfern. He doesn't like the sun-tanning crowd there. Says they're like joints of butcher's meat.
I only wish that I could sunbathe, but I simply blister and get the most frightful freckles all over my arms.
According to Mrs. Gardner, if you lie out in the sun, you get hair all over your body. She's been in grand form this morning. I wish you'd played her up a bit, Monsieur Poirot. Why didn't you tell her that you were down here investigating a particularly gruesome murder and there was a homicidal maniac lurking about in the hotel grounds?
I very much fear she would not have believed me.
Yes, this isn't the kind of place you'd find a body.
Well, but why not, Madame Redfern? Why should there not be a murder on Smuggler's Island?
I don't know. I can't explain it. It just seems so unlikely in a place like this.
It is romantic on Smuggler's Island, yes. It is peaceful. The sea is blue. The sun shines. But you forget that there is evil everywhere under the sun.
How very true.
Of course, I realize that, but all the same...
I think your husband's looking for you, Mrs. Redfern.
Is he? Where?
Over there. He's just come out of the water.
Patrick, here, I'm over here.
I'm coming. I'll just get my towel.
Good morning, everybody.
But who is this?
What an entrance. It is as if she is on the stage.
That must be Arlena Stewart.
She's certainly very beautiful. I wish I could get away with a backless swimsuit like that.
You were talking about evil just now, Monsieur Poirot. No, to my mind, that woman is the personification of evil. She's a bad lot, through and through.
Like the woman who rode upon the scarlet-coloured beast.
Is the water warm, Mr. Redfern?
And Redfern turns towards her like a needle deflected by a magnet.
Help me to find somewhere quiet to sunbathe. What about over there by the rocks? Far from the madding crowd.
Excuse me. I'm going back to the hotel. I'm getting sunburnt sitting here.
It's too bad. She's such a nice little thing. Apparently, she gave up being a schoolteacher when they got married, a couple of years ago.
The shameless effrontery of the woman. To steal a woman's husband away from her before her very eyes.
Patrick Redfern's a fool. Can't he see that Alina Stewart's the sort of woman who takes pleasure in smashing up homes? Well, I'm going to go and get my boat.
Good day, Miss Brewster. That woman, Arlena Stewart, is evil incarnate. There's not a man on the beach who is not following her with his eyes. Except you, Monsieur Poirot. What are you looking at?
There is one other man who is not looking at her.
That is her husband, I believe. Captain Marshall.
Quietly reading the Times. Pretending not to notice what is going on.
You spoke of evil, Monsieur Poirot. Can't you sense its presence?
Oh, yes, Mr. Lane. I can certainly sense it.
May I join you, Monsieur Poirot?
Of course, Mademoiselle Darnley. I would be delighted. May I offer you something? A coffee, perhaps? A glass of...
No, thank you. Nothing at all. Oh, you know, I don't think I like this place. I'm beginning to wonder why I came here.
You have been here before, have you not?
Yes, 2 years ago at Easter. There weren't so many people then.
Something has occurred to worry you.
Oh, I've met a ghost.
The ghost of what? Or of whom?
Oh, just the ghost of myself.
Was it a painful ghost?
Unexpectedly painful. You can't imagine my childhood. You're not English.
Was it such a typically English childhood?
Oh, incredibly so. A big shabby house in the country. Horses, dogs, walks in the rain. Wood fires. Evening dresses that went on for year after year. A neglected garden. Apples in the orchard.
And you wish to go back?
No. I know I can't go back, but I'd like to have gone a different way.
And yet there must be many people who envy you.
Oh, yes, I'm a highly successful businesswoman. And I have the satisfaction of being able to be a creative artist as well. I've got a good figure, a passable face, and not too malicious tongue. Of course, I don't have a husband or children. I failed there, haven't I, Monsieur Poirot?
Oh, to marry and have children, that is the common lot of women. Only one woman in 1,000 can make for herself a name and a position like yours.
What you're saying is I'm damn well off as I am, and I should be content with that.
So, Captain Marshall is an old friend of yours, mademoiselle.
Now, how do you know that? I suppose he told you.
No, nobody has told me anything. After all, I am a detective. I use the little grey cells. It was the obvious conclusion to draw.
Well, I don't see it.
Ah, but consider, mademoiselle. You have been here a week. You are lively, gay, without a care in the world. Today, suddenly, you speak of ghosts, of regrets. What has happened? For several days, there have been no new arrivals, until last night, when Captain Marshall and his wife and daughter arrived. Today, the change. Huh? It is obvious.
I can't deny it. Kenneth Marshall and I were children together. Well, he was a good bit older than I was. The Marshalls live next door to us. Ken was always nice to me. I've not seen anything of him for a long time.
He is sympathetic, yes?
Oh, he's a dear. I'd say his only fault is a penchant for making unfortunate marriages. He's an utter fool where women are concerned. You remember the Martindale case?
Martindale? Ah, yes. Arsenic, was it not? The woman was tried for murdering her husband, but it was proved that he was an arsenic eater, and she was acquitted.
Yeah, that's the one. Well, after her acquittal, Ken married her. That's the sort of damn silly thing he does.
But if she was innocent...
But surely there are women to marry in the world other than somebody who's been tried for murder. Well, he was young, of course. She died when Linda was born, a year after their marriage.
And then Arlena Stewart came along.
Yeah, she was starring in a musical show at the time. And she was cited in the Codrington divorce case.
Ah.
Everyone expected Codrington would marry her when it was all over, but he dropped her like a hot brick. I believe she actually tried to sue him for breach of promise. The next thing is that Ken goes and marries her. A damn fool.
She is a very beautiful woman, mademoiselle.
Oh, yeah, she's beautiful, all right. Then about 3 years ago, there was another scandal. Old Sir Roger Erskine left her every penny he had. I should have thought that would have opened Ken's eyes if nothing else did.
And did it not?
He seems to have an absolutely blind belief in her. Well, you can see for yourself. Look how she's making up to Patrick Redfern. He's the kind of handsome idiot that's meat and drink to Arlena. I don't think that poor little washed-up wife of his will stand a chance against a man-eating tigress like Arlena.
And what about the young girl? The child of Marcia's first marriage?
Linda? With a stepmother like Arlena. God help the poor kid.
I never realized quite how much I hated her until we came here. It was all right at school, but now I can't escape from her. This place could be quite fun, but somehow she manages to come between me and everything else. And it's going to go on like this, day after day, month after month. And there's nothing I can do to stop it. But she's ruining my life, and she's making Father look a fool. I hate her. I hate her.
You've met this Redfern fellow before, I gather.
Yes, darling, at a cocktail party somewhere or other. I thought he was rather a pet.
Did you know that he and his wife were coming here?
Gracious, no. It was a complete surprise.
I thought perhaps that was what put the idea of this place into your mind. You were very insistent that we should come here.
Kenneth, darling, I'm trying to do my mascara. You're not going to be horrid, are you?
Look, Arlena, the boy's obviously quite fond of his wife, and she obviously adores him. Do you have to upset the whole show?
It's so unfair, blaming me. I haven't done anything. It's not my fault if people go crazy about me.
So you admit that young Redfern is crazy about you?
It's really rather stupid of him. But you know that I don't actually care for anyone but you, don't you, darling?
I think I know you pretty well, Arlena.
Did you know that woman was going to be here?
I don't understand what you mean.
You insisted on coming here. I wanted to go to Tintagel again, but you were absolutely set on this place.
Oh, you're being ridiculous. Don't let's quarrel about it.
I don't want to quarrel.
Then behave like a reasonable human being.
I think this must be the most peaceful place on the island.
Remember the Downs at Shipley when we were kids?
Could I ever forget?
Pretty good, those days. You haven't changed much, Rosamond.
Oh, yes, I have.
Oh, you're rich and successful, but you're still the same Rosamond.
I wish I were. Why is it that we can't hold on to the nice natures and high ideals we had when we were young?
I don't know that your nature was ever particularly nice. You used to get into the most frightful rages. You half choked me the day you fell into that stream.
Kenneth, if I say something really outrageous, will you ever speak to me again?
I wouldn't ever not want to speak to you.
Why didn't you get a divorce from your wife?
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
Well, you're perfectly entitled to say it. But you just don't understand.
Are you still frightfully fond of her?
Well, it's not really a question of that. You see, I married her.
Well, she's pretty notorious.
Is she? I suppose she is.
It's obvious you're pretty unhappy. You could fix it so she could divorce you.
I dare say I could.
People get divorced all the time.
And that's just what I hate.
What do you mean?
I can't stand that kind of attitude to life. Taking the easy way out as quickly as possible. There's such a thing as good faith. If you marry a woman and commit yourself to looking after her, then it's up to you to do it. I don't hold with quick marriage and easy divorce. Arlena's my wife. And that's all there is to it.
Till death do us part?
Till death do us part.
So, you're the famous sleuth, eh?
Yes, I am Hercule Poirot.
Blatt, Horace Blatt. Very pleased to meet you. Down here on a job, eh?
No. Nothing of the kind. I'm taking an holiday.
You'd say that anyway, wouldn't you?
Not necessarily.
Well, you'd be safe enough with me, you know. Learned to keep my mouth shut years ago. Shouldn't have gone on the way I have if I hadn't learned to do that. Mm-hmm. Same with you, I expect. You've got to keep it up that you're just here on a holiday.
And why should you suppose the contrary?
I'm a man of the world, Mr. Poirot. A chap like you would be at Deauville or Le Touquet or Joanne Le Pin. That's more your spiritual home.
Hmm. I should have expected that you too might have been more at home in Deauville or Biarritz.
Instead of which, we're both stuck in this dump in the pouring rain. Oh, God knows why I came here. I think it was because the place sounded romantic. The Jolly Roger on Smuggler's Island. Makes you think of when you were a boy. I brought the boat down here with me too.
Oh, you enjoy sailing? Mr. Blatt?
Can't get enough of it. Redfern's keen on it too. I'd hoped he'd come out with me a bit. But he's a lost cause now. Always hanging round that red-haired Mrs. Marshall. I should think that her husband's got his hands full looking after her.
Uh-huh. Oh,
but here comes young Redfern. Better drop the subject. Mm-hmm. Evening, Patrick, my boy. What's it to be?
Oh, thanks. I'll have a martini.
Mm-hmm. One martini, please, Doris. And you, Mr. Poirot?
No, not for me, thank you.
Well, suit yourself, my friend. And another glass of the usual for me, please, Doris.
Right, sir.
Oh, it's so good to be back on Smuggler's Island again. I used to come here on holiday from Ireland when I was a kid. I potted about in a dinghy. That was long before there was a hotel here, of course.
And what was it like in those days?
There were just a few fishermen's cottages at Leathercombe and an old tumble-down house here on the island, all shut up. There were stories about secret passages leading down from the house to Pixie's cave. We were always searching for them.
Here's your martini, Patrick.
Thanks.
What's all this about a Pixie's cave?
Cheers.
Mm.
It's on Pixie Cove. The entrance is hidden by a lot of piled-up boulders. The cave's like a long, thin crack. You can just squeeze through it.
But what is this pixie?
A kind of West Country fairy spirit. There are scores of tales about them in Devon and Cornwall.
Huh.
There are tours on Dartmoor, where they're supposed to live, and I expect the farmers coming home after a thick night still complain of being pixie-led.
You mean when they've had one over the eight?
Well, that's certainly the common-sense explanation.
Well, time to get ready for dinner.
Uh-huh.
On the whole, pirates are more my kind of thing than pixies.
For a hard-bitten businessman, Mr. Blatt seems to have a very romantic imagination. Do you know him well?
No, not really. I've been out sailing with him once or twice, but he doesn't really like having anyone with him. He prefers to be on his own.
Oh, that is indeed curious. It is singularly unlike his practice on land.
It's always pretty difficult keeping out of his way.
I think, Mr. Redfern, that you enjoy living.
Well, certainly I do. Why not?
Why not indeed? That is why, as a much older man, I venture to offer you a little piece of advice.
And what is that?
A very wise friend of mine in the police force said to me years ago, Hercule, my friend, if you would know tranquility, avoid women.
It's a bit too late for that. I'm a married man.
I know that. And your wife is a very charming, very accomplished woman. She is, I think, very fond of you.
I'm very fond of her.
I'm delighted to hear it.
Look here, Monsieur Poirot, what exactly are you getting her?
Les femmes. They are capable of complicating life unbearably. And the English. They conduct their affairs in a manner that is indescribable. If it was necessary for you to come here, Mr. Redfern, why, in the name of heaven, did you bring your wife?
I haven't the faintest idea what you were talking
about. You know perfectly. I am not so foolish as to argue with an infatuated man. I utter only the word of caution.
You've been listening to those stupid women, Mrs. Gardner and Miss Brewster. They've got nothing better to do with their lives than concoct spiteful stories. Just because a woman's good-looking, they're onto her like a pack of harpies.
Are you really so naive as all that, Mr. Redfern? Once again, I say to you, take care. She is a very dangerous woman.
Taking a little stroll before turning in, Monsieur Poirot?
Yes, madame. All day long I have been cooped up in the hotel by the bad weather. Now it has passed, I need a little fresh air.
Christine Redfern is all by herself, on the seat on the cliff top. See if you can persuade the poor child to come in. It's not good for her.
I will do what I can, Mademoiselle Brewster. Bonsoir.
Good night, Monsieur Poirot.
You should not be sitting out here on that damp seat, madame. You will catch the chill.
No, I shan't. And what does it matter, anyway?
Oh, come now. You are not a child. You are an educated woman. You must look at things sensibly.
I assure you that I never take cold.
It has been a miserable day. The rain came down. The mist was so thick that one could not see through it. And now, the sky is clear. And up above, the stars shine. That is like life, madame.
Spare me your platitudes, Monsieur Poirot. Do you know what most sickens me in all this business?
What?
Pity. Do you think I don't know what they're all saying? Poor Mrs. Redfern, that unfortunate little woman. Little? I'm 5'9". They say little because they're sorry for me. And I can't bear it.
Although you take exception to what you call my platitude, madame, allow me to tell you something. The Adelaine Marshalls of this world count for very little.
Oh, that's nonsense.
I assure you it is true. Their empire is of the moment, and for the moment. To count, really to count, a woman must have goodness and brains.
Do you think men care for goodness and brains?
Fortunately, yes.
I cannot agree with you.
Your husband loves you, madame. I know it.
How can you know it?
I have seen him looking at you, madame.
I can't bear it. I can't bear it.
Patience, madame. It will all come right. Calm yourself.
I'm fine. Leave me now.
It would be better if you returned to the hotel.
I just want to be alone for a little while longer. Don't worry. I shan't do anything stupid. And thank you, Monsieur Poirot. Good night.
If only we had the whole island to ourselves.
The whole island? I'd settle for a room with a strong lock on the door.
You've got to find somewhere we can really be alone together for hours and hours.
It would seem that Mr. Redfern has not taken my advice.
You really do love me, then?
I adore you. Don't you know that by now?
She's like an animal, that woman. And a very vicious one.
Remarkable night. Eh, Poirot? Looks as though we should have fine weather tomorrow.
Let us hope so, Captain Marshall. Good night.
Good night.
It is as I felt in Egypt, that fatal night on the Nile. I am certain that a murder is going to be committed, and I feel utterly powerless to prevent it. How can one stand in the way of the inevitable?
In part one of Agatha Christie's Evil Under the Sun, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat. Arlena Marshall, Fiona Fullerton. Captain Marshall, Robin Ellis. Linda Marshall, Lindsay Fawcett. Mrs. Gardner, Wendy Craig. Mr. Gardner, John Rowe. Christine Redfern, Susanna Corbett. Patrick Redfern, Ian Glenn. Rosamund Darnley, Sabina Franklin. Miss Brewster, Joan Littlewood. The Reverend Stephen Lane, Ewan Thomas. Horace Blatt, John Hartley. Evil Under the Sun is dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.
And tomorrow, it looks like Poirot's fears that death is in the air are about to come true. But who's going to be the victim? Find out in part two of Evil Under the Sun. That's at the same time tomorrow. Now, this Sunday here on Radio 4 Extra, we find an old lady busy in the kitchen of a big house, unaware that a shadowy stranger has approached her front door. He rings the loud doorbell, causing her cockatoo to screech wildly. She rushes to the door, opens it slowly, and is confronted by this sinister figure who steps forward, lowers his hat, and asks...
Mrs. Wilberforce?
Yes?
I understand you have rooms to let. I saw your charming card in the shop window.
Oh, the rooms, yes. Won't you come in, please?
Thank you.
So begins The Lady Killers, the classic dark British comedy that's travelled from Ealing to Hollywood and back to the West End. And this Sunday afternoon you can enjoy the radio adaptation here on 4 Extra. The doors open at 1:30.
British Broadcasting Corporation.
Marking 90 years of radio in 90 seconds.
2001.
My name is Najiba Kasrai. I was the producer and presenter of a programme called The World of You, which was broadcasted by the BBC World Service Pashto programme to audience in Afghanistan and Pakistan. I visited this camp of refugees in Pakistan around that time, and I realised that the entire room was grey. There was no colour, nothing at all, no pink, no blue. So the aim was to inject a little bit of spark and colour in life of these children. With the help of technology, we created this voice, and we've called this little character Grey Rabbit. The audience were convinced that this is a little girl. It's a little girl, the age of 7. So we start receiving letters for her and toys. I think the highlight of the whole character, rabbit character, was when one of my colleagues visited Kabul. He said, I'm sitting in this meeting with the Taliban commander, and this Taliban commander comes to me and says in my ear, so is the little rabbit a little girl? Or I think he also said something like, pass my regard or something. So my colleague came and he said, oh my God, Najiba, we really managed to fool the entire nation.
Najiba Kasrai there with another of our 90 by 90 features. There'll be lots more of these throughout the week.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
It's 9 o'clock. I'm Steve Urquhart, settling in nicely on my first day here. Looking forward to the Comedy Club with Bridget Christie at 10 tonight. Before that, Clive Anderson ties up the loose ends in 15 minutes. But right now, we've another of our short stories by Bristol-based writers, Hidden Depths by Dan Caswell. In the early hours of the morning, two friends don dry suits in Bristol city centre and embark on a subterranean adventure by canoe. The reader is Joe Sims.
While there's plenty that's weird about changing into a tight-fitting rubber suit in the back of another man's car, what's making me feel really uncomfortable is the fact that I'm doing it in the middle of town. We're parked just off the waterfront. It's raining. There's a couple stumbling down the alleyway. They look like they're coming back from a nightclub, both of them sheltering under one coat. They peer in the window just as I switch my torch on, and it makes them jump. The girl laughs out loud, and then they stumble off into the rain. There's a knock on the window just behind my head. It's Ryan. His wet hair is sticking to his face. Batteries, he says. What? you're going to need spare batteries. I'm not wearing rubber because I've got a fetish. It's a dry suit. We're going to explore an underground river. And while I'm not totally sold on the idea, there's no getting out of it now. Ryan's come all the way down from London. The last time we met, we went to a restaurant in Shoreditch. And the whole thing felt a bit awkward. It was mainly my fault. Ryan earns 40k a year editing corporate videos while I earn minimum wage in a bar. At film school, I was the talented one. But Ryan was the one that buckled down and learnt some actual skills. As we ate, I embarrassed him by telling him he should buy a jet ski, a house and a classic car, trying to get him to do all the things I'd do if ever I had money. At the end of the meal, he embarrassed me by paying for the whole thing. As he walked back towards his tube, I remember thinking he looked like a native, completely at ease on the streets of London. I had this weird feeling that I might never see him again, that perhaps he couldn't wait to leave me behind. Then yesterday, out of the blue, I got a thing.